Hello and welcome to the second London Chess Boxing Podcast with me, Tim Woolgar. And
myself, Gavin Patterson, the grievous bodily farmer.
And me, Zeno the technician.
Well, here we are.
Second podcast. What's on the agenda today?
First of all, we should say, after the first podcast, we have already moved up in podcast recording terms.
Yes, because now we have moved on from the interior of Gavin's car to the interior of Iguana Studios in Acre Lane, Brixton. Isn't it lovely here?
Yes, so thanks very much to Ben and Tim and the guys at Iguana Studios. It's a real pleasure to be recording here.
And on the way over to the studios today, we had the great pleasure of seeing the Duck Tours
vehicle. Despite the fact I was driving, I put my hand out and like made a noise and pulled my arm down like I was driving a big rig.
I was honking the horn.
instead of just honking my horn, which is right in front of me.
So, in conclusion, certainly Duck Tours seems to be not the worst choice anymore.
They're only in the lead because they're the thing that's been mentioned most on these podcasts rather than having an interest in sponsoring us, I think.
But they haven't heard the podcast. I mean, what are those Duck Tours people going to think when they saw three maniacs going waving at them, cheering, honking
their
horn?
It's true.
People just do that to the Duck Tours fan? I don't think so. Let's hope they listen to the first podcast and maybe it'll all fall into place.
So shall we talk about the upcoming show? Who we got booked? Tim, I know you're quite excited about who's on the card this time.
What I'm excited about is mostly the fact that we've got the whole card, four fights, matched really well, I think. We've got Chris Levy versus Matt Reed. Crazy Arms Reed is back versus the General. This will be their third time, bit of a grudge match.
Because I fought him a couple of times, and I was quite put off actually halfway through the fight because, like you said, it was a bit like the Harry Potter incident, Pottergate. The crowd just turned on Crazy Arms, and instead of shouting Crazy Arms, they were shouting Lazy Arms. I thought that might have spurred him on, maybe, to, you know, put a few more hours in. Lazy Arms, yeah.
Well, that obviously did sting because there was no Lazy Arms in his last bout against Liam.
You know, I came in halfway through because I was working, and I just saw Matt just land a couple of big rights.
Well, it wasn't power, but, I mean, Matt's technique and energy and fitness, where he pulled it out from, I don't know.
It was impressive.
Was very impressive, yeah. I thought Yogi would give him a lot more problems than he did, but Matt boxed like he was a seasoned pro, didn't he?
Yeah, yeah.
And next, we've got Rob Fletcher, who you would have seen fighting Henry Blanchard in November. He's coming back to fight Nick Cornish, who's an experienced chess boxer.
Yeah, very well-established chess boxer, so very interesting match, actually.
He's been out of the game for couple of seasons, but now he's coming back for this fight. It should be amazing. It'll be a really good fight, actually, because Fletcher is a really unorthodox fighter.
What's his style like?
Hands down, unorthodox movements.
Fight like that.
You have to have very good footwork, and you have to be quick. So it's not. I always think it makes a nice contrast because it's explosive. Something's going to happen when you have a boxer like that. It's interesting
to
watch.
The thing is, though, once you get tired, it's okay if you're fresh, isn't it? Once you get tired, and it only takes a split second, and you've basically got no guard there to cover
you. His boxing style could make him a few enemies and probably equal numbers of friends. He's going to polarize the audience. I think he's got a slight bit of the Ali about him, hasn't he?
But that's the odd thing because he's one of the most polite guys I've ever come across. It's just funny to see the difference from when you just normally talk to him and then he steps into the ring and it's like, oh, it's a different person.
That's the way it should be. Step into the ring and become a different animal.
You've got to back yourself, haven't you? If you're going to get in the ring, you've got to think you can do it. So perhaps a bit of arrogance isn't a bad thing.
Nick, by contrast, is very orthodox, very classical in his approach, very dedicated to fitness, and it will be a very good contest. And then we are going beyond that. We've got Lazarus.
Oh, yeah, Lazarus flying in from Finland.
What a great name.
He's probably the chess boxer that has the most fights per capita.
Yeah, that's right, because in Finland, even though they haven't really got the most of anything, they rationalise it by saying, per capita, we have the best, food or the most fish. For everyone, you know, it's all per capita.
They probably do have the most fish. Period.
The least number of murders per capita.
But it's this ongoing joke now that I even suggested to them that really he should fight us last per capita. But for some reason he wants to stick to Lazarus. So I don't know why.
That's his ring name, Lazarus. Yeah.
Because they have the most number of people coming back from the dead per capita of any country in Europe.
But it'd be great to see him fight. Who is he fighting?
He's fighting against Dan Chandler, who's not been seen in the chess boxing arena before, but he's had some fights in kickboxing, so he knows his way around the dojo, and he can be a good opponent for Lars, I think. And two more debutants. That's Lewis McClellan, Scottish, lives in London. And works for, I think he's a city journalist, isn't he? Financial journalist of some kind. Mark Reed from Bristol. Mark and Lewis are going to, be making their debut together against each other in the ring.
Yeah, that's going to be a good one as well.
I still think there's some mileage in perhaps changing some chess boxers' names to, you know, branded items or brands.
So instead of Gavin the Grievous Bodily Farmer.
Yeah, I'd be cool.
Be Gavin the Grievous Phosphate Manure.
Exactly, or Xena Screwfix or whatever. Or,
yeah,
you know.
I mean, I'm up for that.
But you really like Screwfix, don't you?
I like them. Right. I buy loads of stuff from them. What can I say?
But, you know, I mean, well, Honda, you could just call yourself Honda, couldn't you?
Oh my God, that's so much better than Hippo.
But like E-Honda.
Can it be Bentley?
Yeah, if we can get sponsorship.
I don't think you don't quite make a Bentley, sorry.
Well, Bentley is actually a name, though, isn't it? So
not that Bentley is better than Honda.
No.
I'm not saying that.
No, the other brands are available.
And Hyundai. However, all I'm saying is that I thought Bentley Woolgar sounds like quite a good name.
I think you should just change your name to that anyway.
Bentley
Woolgar is a great name. You could wear a monocle.
I know, it's a good name, isn't it?
Really good name. Yeah.
And Monocle, that's just like Nine Quarterly then.
I've got a friend who works for Monocle. She did the first ever report about chess boxing, and she then went from strength to strength and is now working as a staffer at Monocle.
All right, okay.
How about that? Chess boxing is good for your career. Anyone who does chess boxing and then puts it on their CV as part of their interests, I guarantee you, you will get a job interview.
You'll get picked out, wouldn't you?
You will get picked out.
But they'll just want to ask you what it is to start with.
It's not just me making that up. You had Miriam. She was working, I don't know, she got out of college. She was struggling a little bit for work, started working for London Chess Boxing. Then, on a part-time basis, put it on her CV. Next thing you know, she's editing her own magazine.
Amazing.
And what was the first question at interview?
What is chess boxing?
Another friend working for a publishing company put chess boxing on his interview because he was a chess boxer. Not only did he get the job with a publishing company, but within 6 months, he's now heading up a new national division of that publishing company.
I mean, it's almost like you're attributing every achievement of anybody who's ever been involved in chess boxing to chess boxing. Mm. Is that basically what you're saying?
No, so what I'm saying
is, if you've been involved in chess boxing and you become prime minister, it's because of chess boxing.
Well,
is that kind of what you're saying?
Who can say that it's not? But what I'm saying is that chess boxing does get your name noticed. It gets your foot in the door.
It's true.
Gets you that chink in the armour. And people look at you always different because you're the only chess boxer they know.
Mm.
And guess what? They might think, that guy is smart and he's tough. He's the guy to head up my new department or my new division.
My new hybrid division.
Not only is chess boxing great for your health, it's also great for your wealth.
New tagline.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe.
I think that another good reason for even just going to a chess boxing night, if you've never been before, is that you are actually, you've always got that in your pocket to pull out a conversational gambit anytime you want to dominate the room, you know. someone's talking about that. I climbed Mount Kilimanjaro. Oh, maybe Everest there. Yeah, I was kind of calm. I climbed up Mount Everest.
Yeah, I play football for him.
Hold on, that's
all the things Sean Mooney did.
Yeah, exactly. I know. It sounds like I've only got Sean Mooney. I actually don't think chess boxing trumps climbing Everest. That's one of the ones it probably wouldn't.
Probably.
I don't know.
You're saying, but the probably climbing Everest is more of an achievement than chess boxing. Probably, you're not sure.
No, I'd say it's level.
Level. Yeah. It's like K2. Like chess boxing is K2.
I climb K2.
Yeah, it's maybe like 14 inches lower than Everest.
I play football. Someone is droning on about. You just chip in and say, oh, by the way, I was chess boxing last weekend. Everyone.
Are you saying that going to a chess boxing event as an audience member is trumping climbing K2?
Yes. Yeah.
I would.
In terms of dinner party conversation or in terms of pub conversation,
people
will look to you and not just the guys either or girls. You know, it will attract members of the opposite gender.
It definitely is a complete icebreaker in any kind of conversation. You just start it off and people just go, what? And then you win.
To the point now where I actually do not ever tell anyone what I do for a living or what I do.
Explain it.
Because I end up talking about it for 2 hours every single night wherever I go.
So what do you say now when people say, so, Tim, what are you doing?
I don't know. I do a bit of chess coaching.
Oh, okay. And then that turns off.
Shut up at that point. Leave me alone.
I have nothing to say to that at all. But I introduce chess to some of the really bright kids in South Africa that I've been working with. And with the charity Yellow Brick, and about 9 months later I came back, and not only had they arranged to enter a local chess competition, but I played a young guy, he's probably about 15, called Justice, and he beat me on the chessboard. The first game I came back and he beat me.
I'm not
saying that's impressive because I'm not very good at chess, but the fact is that he just took it up and he just practiced, and in 9 months he was able to go from never playing before to beating the person who actually taught me how to play.
That's
amazing.
Great. But can I just bring up the chess coaching again? Because, as you said, people, that's nothing people might want to start a conversation with. When it's a shame, because it should be back in schools, it's a great thing to get in as kids.
I don't think that's a shame at all. I think it is coming back in schools.
Is it? Yeah,
oh, definitely, good. Yeah. I mean, Chess in Schools and Communities, which is the charity run by Malcolm Payne, the chess boxing commentator, so Synergy, has gone from strength to strength in the last few years. That's nothing to do with chess boxing. I have to, admit that. But they've done really well. They've done tons of hard work, and they've got dozens, literally dozens and dozens of schools all over the country. Thousands of children are playing chess, and there's a very interesting study being undertaken at the moment, the results of which will be published soon, which is a comparative study of schools which have had chess on their curriculum, the CSC schools, and those which haven't had chess on the curriculum.
Yeah,
and looking at comparing the results in exams and various different educational criteria, and we will see whether there is a genuine difference enough to make it possible to say that chess is good for school children.
Yeah, that's good. At the last chess classics, I watched one game where a young girl, probably not older than 10, was destroying this grown-up man on the board. She was just sitting there, you know, waiting for him to make the next move. He was laboring over every move, and she already knew what she was doing, and then in the end it was checkmate and it was done, and it was beautiful to watch. Really good.
Yeah, beautiful if you're rooting for the 10-year-old girl,
which I was, and probably everyone else in the room was.
I would be thinking more of the poor guy who's getting smashed up, because I've played against children like that before, and it's no fun, I can tell you.
The grown-ups that don't play chess always think of it as this long, boring thing. Kids just see the different pieces and go, oh, there's a horse, there's a rook, there's like this could happen, and they completely get the play element of what chess is, and that is nice to see.
That's it from the second ever chess boxing podcast. So don't forget the show coming up on April the 2nd. All the details on the website, londonchessboxing.com. It's goodbye from me, Tim Walder.
It's goodbye from me, the grievous bodily farmer.
And goodbye from me.